Welcome to episode 7 of the Serious About Security podcast for Friday, May 11th, 2012, brought to you by the Greater Lafayette Security Professionals Group and the Center for Education and Research in Information Assurance and Security, or SERIAS, at Purdue University. Let me introduce the host of today's podcast. I'm Preston Wiley, CISSP, CCNA.
This is Keith Watson, Research Engineer at SERIAS.
And I'm Mike Hill, CISSP.
In the announcements, we wanted to mention that the SERIAS Security Seminar has reached its end for this semester, and we'll announce the schedule for the fall semester seminar speakers in future podcasts. But if you need more content, you can always watch the previous seminars, and those are available at the SERIAS website at www.cerias.purdue.edu under the Seminar tab. Just look for the Seminar Archive link or just search.
The May Greater Lafayette Security Professionals Meeting was held on May 10th. In this meeting, I presented a case study on how the group utilizes multimedia components, and Keith delivered an intriguing presentation on introspection. Our next GLSP monthly meeting will be Thursday, June 14th. We hope to see you there.
In news, Microsoft released quite a few updates on their Patch Tuesday, which was May 8th. Three of those updates were critical. Four of those updates were important. And they updated various things, including Windows, .NET Framework, Silverlight, and Office. In addition, Apple also released updates for their software, including iOS, minor Mac OS X updates. They released those on May 10th. This updated Mac OS 10 to 10.7.4, which contains Safari update 5.1.6. iOS was updated to 5.1.1, which fixed three issues. And Safari 5.1.7 for Mac OS 10, 1.0, and Windows was updated, and the security update was 2012-002 for Mac OS X. On April 30th, Google updated Chrome to version 18.0.1025.168, which fixed three high and two medium-ranked vulnerabilities. And on May 4th, Adobe updated Flash to version 11.2.202.235 to address a critical vulnerability that was being actively exploited. And the vulnerability allowed people to attempt to trick users into clicking a malicious file delivered in an email message. Hopefully, people are smart enough not to click links in email messages, but I guess some people still can get fooled by that sort of thing. And that is the news, and now we'll go on to our tool discussion for this week.
So, for this week, we're going to talk about basically web-based storage services and protection for your information on those services. Now, there are some basic ones that you've heard of, like Box.net or Dropbox, and now Google Drive, which has only recently been released, which kind of ties Google Docs into a desktop-type file synchronization tool. And so you can sync your Google Docs and then add additional files as well. And those will show up in your Google Drive now. And all of these systems, but if you look at the vendors' websites, they talk about some of the security that they provide. Some of that is procedural. Some of it is technical. On the technical side, most of the file transfers actually occur over HTTPS, so as the information travels over the internet, you have some protection there. But on the storage side, typically, they're not encrypted on the provider's storage site. They do have some procedures for their staff that say, hey, we'll only look at the metadata, so we know what file names are in your drive, and we know some other permissions-related stuff, and when you last updated it. But they're not allowed, the employees are not specifically allowed to look at that content unless they are under subpoena to do so. But that doesn't always give us a great warm and fuzzy about this. And if you read some of the license agreements, while they specifically say, you know, your content is yours, they also have a claim in there that allows them to reproduce your data so they can provide services to you. And some people are a little frightened by what that means. So one of the ways to protect your information is to encrypt it. If you encrypt the data that you store on these file synchronization services, then you're in control of that encryption, hopefully protecting your data. And so one of the ways, there are varieties of ways of doing this, but I was going to talk specifically about doing it on a Mac. On the Mac, there's a built-in disk image encryption capability. So you can create what is essentially a virtual disk on, and it's created as a file, and then you can apply AES encryption to it. And you have, in the on the Mac, you have two options for choosing your key size, one being 128-bit keys, the other being 256. And you can create a disk image and store it in your Dropbox, for example, and then mount that disk image and put all your files in there. And when you unmount that disk image, that data is then synchronized with the cloud services. And so there's some advantages to doing that. And there's some drawbacks too. But we'll talk specifically about how you might want to do this. On the Mac, there's a utility called Disk Utility, and it's primarily for managing file services and creating new disk images or formatting drives. And one of the things you can do is create a new image and say, I'm going to store this in my Dropbox, for example. I'm going to choose the image type, and we'll talk about the types you can use. And then you can encrypt that disk image, and then you'll be asked for a passphrase to encrypt the key that will be used to encrypt the data. There are two options which I have tried and used, and we'll talk about those. One is to choose what's called a sparse bundle disk image. The other is to choose just a regular read-write disk image. When you choose a read-write disk image, you get a single file. So if you say, I want a 100-megabyte virtual disk, you'll essentially get a 100-megabyte file, and that file is then the encrypted contents of whatever you put into that virtual disk. So when you store the data on Dropbox and you make a change and then you unmount that disk image, Dropbox will synchronize all 100 megabytes of that file. So that can take some time. So if you're in a hurry and you want to quickly log out of your system and you're waiting for it to sync, you have to wait for it to sync that 100 megabytes. And so if your upload speed is a little slow, it will take a while to do that. The other option is to use a sparse bundle image. And the difference is that instead of storing everything in one large file, the contents are broken up over a series of smaller files. And so if you go in and edit a single file in your 100 megabyte virtual disk, only one or two of the data files that actually store the content for that file get updated. And so those could be, they vary in size, but typically you might see them to be 8 megabytes. So if you've modified a file, you may at least modify one 8 meg file, and 8 megs to upload is much shorter than a 100 megabyte file. So that's another option that people can use, which has worked fairly well for what I've done. Now, the problem with any type of encryption tools and virtual disk images, and this is true whether it's encrypted or not, is that when you have mounted that disk image, you need to make sure that you have not mounted it anywhere else. And you also have to make sure that the synchronization is complete before you open it on another machine. So the great thing about having file services like Dropbox and Google Drive is the ability to access your data on multiple machines. But the problem is you can't access the data on a virtual disk simultaneously. If you do, you'll get what's called in the Dropbox world a conflicted copy, which means that you have two different systems trying to edit the same file at roughly the same time. Or you've had one system that did not finish its synchronization before the other file system tried to open that file. And then you'll get what's called a conflicted copy. And it Dropbox, thankfully, will put in the name of the system and tell you the date which the conflicted copy happens. Now, this, to me, is a frightening occurrence, because then the question becomes, which system has the accurate data? And especially when you're dealing with a disk image, if that disk image is corrupted, you lose all of your files. So while encryption does give you a lot of protection, there's this issue that you need to be aware of. And so conflicted copies can be a nightmare to try to correct. If you have the read-write disk image where you have one single file, suddenly you may have two large 100 megabyte files, one of which is a conflicted copy. If you're using the sparse bundle image, then you may have multiple of what they're called bands. These are the files that actually store the contents. You may have multiple band files that are conflicted. And so resolving that can be a real challenge. And so the best advice I have is, if you're going to use this method, make sure that you unmount the disk image when you're completely done. Let it synchronize, and you can see the icon in your system. Let it synchronize completely before you then try to open that disk image on another system. And that means not only syncing it up to the cloud, but syncing it down from the cloud first. So that's one thing to keep in mind when using the Mac OS built-in system for a disk image encryption. So it can be done, but there are some caveats to that. So just be careful if you do use it that way. And the other thing I'd suggest is make sure you have a backup of that content somewhere. You can often script that in a way to just save a copy of that disk image off to another machine. That way, if you had an issue and you can't resolve it, you can go back to a copy that you had, hopefully from the day before.
All right. Thank you, Keith. I'm now going to discuss TrueCrypt as an encryption method. And TrueCrypt is an open source on-the-fly encryption that's available for both Mac, Linux, and Windows, and has proven to be a good solution for me because I do run kind of the blended environment where I have a Windows workstation but a MacBook as my laptop. So I really needed something that would run under both environments. And TrueCrypt supports AES, SERPA, and TwoFish as encryption algorithms, 256-bit keys. It also supports cascades of those algorithms. So, for example, you could actually encrypt it with AES, TwoFish, and Serpent. So encrypt it three times with three different algorithms. However, I do believe there's a bit of a performance hit when you're running that much encryption. But if you wanted to run that strong of encryption, it gives you the ability to do that. Another nice feature of TrueCrypt is it supports the ability to encrypt portable devices. And you can do this in a couple different ways. For example, if you have that 100 meg encrypted area, you could just store that on a USB key, obviously, and it would be in its encrypted form. And then you would need to plug it into a computer running TrueCrypt and be able to access it. The other thing they do offer is they do offer the ability to run TrueCrypt on the portable device. However, I do believe you have to have administrative privileges in order to allow that software to run. They do offer a full encrypted disk. At least I know they offer that within Windows. I believe I had a laptop at one time where I ran that, and that was pretty nice. Essentially, everything was encrypted, and when you booted up the machine, you had to type in a password at boot up before it would continue on, so you could protect everything on the machine that way as well. Another nice feature that TrueCrypt offers, and unfortunately I've never had to be in this position, but they offer the ability to have hidden volumes within the encrypted volumes. And what they state is this provides plausible deniability. So the idea is you can mount your volume in a couple different ways. If you're under duress and someone knows you're using encryption, you could mount your TrueCrypt volume in such a way that you're really very protected data would be in a hidden volume, and there would be no indication that data is part of that volume. So essentially, if you're under duress and someone's asking you to do that, you unencrypt your data and say, well, here's all my data, but they never really see the super secret stuff. And then using a different, I believe, combination of passwords under normal conditions when you mount that volume, then you can get to that hidden data. So that's kind of a nice feature of it as well. And what I have done is I do use Dropbox as my cloud service, and I do have a smaller TrueCrypt volume, about, 128 meg or so, not very large at all, partially due to what Keith was explaining. It does take some time to sync up to the cloud, and the larger the volume, any small change I make to that mounted disk, it has to sync up that entire volume. So I use a smaller volume just for some more sensitive type data, since Dropbox itself does provide a layer of encryption as well. And as Keith already stated, though, under certain conditions, if they're subpoenaed or whatever, they can provide access to those files. So something that's higher in sensitivity level, I will place into this TrueCrypt volume. And I'm going to go ahead and knock on wood right now. I've been very fortunate thus far in that I've not run into a conflicted copy. However, I do not use TrueCrypt does offer an auto mount feature so that when you start up the machine, it will automatically mount the volumes. I do not use that feature. I intentionally go and mount the volumes, whether on the MacBook or my Windows machine. And I do that in part because I do not want to have two copies of it open at the same time. And I always am good to shut down my machines when I'm finished for the day. So when I finish at work for the day, I shut that machine down so I can't inadvertently leave that volume mounted. However, that is that would be a concern of mine. And I, like I said, thus far, I've just been very careful to try to avoid that situation. Now, along with my TrueCrypt has worked great as far as having my laptop and my Windows machine be able to access it. However, my smart devices, using my iPhone, while I can get to my Dropbox location and I can get to my TrueCrypt volume, do not yet have a way in order to access the files in that. So that is one limitation I've run into so far.
Okay, and I'm going to talk about yet another encryption tool. This one's called BoxCryptor. This one is actually built specifically for encrypting files within a cloud storage thing like Dropbox or Google Drive. So it was built with that idea in mind. So it can be used to essentially encrypt your documents on the client before they're synced to the cloud storage solution that you're using. And it's built on top of the ENCFS, which is an encrypted file system under GPL. It is built on a GPL-based encrypted file system solution. Of course, the system itself is not entirely free. If you want to go above a certain amount of space, you have to pay for it. But it creates encrypted. It uses an encrypted folder on the disk, which will mount as a drive. And unlike TrueCrypt and the Mac encryption tool, it doesn't use a container file, a single file. It actually does a file-by-file encryption method, which means that each file is individually encrypted, and the file name is also encrypted. So, unlike TrueCrypt and the Mac encryptor, which does a container, it doesn't quite hide everything. With those, you have a single file and you have no idea what's in there. You don't know how many files, you don't know how many folders. With this, you can actually go into the encrypted folder and you can see that there are files, you can see that there are folders. You can't tell what the names of those files are, but you can actually see there's stuff there and how much is there. If that's something that you're concerned about, then this probably wouldn't be the tool that you necessarily want to use. But in doing that, it allows essentially individual files to be synced up. So if you change one file within your encrypted folder, then that file gets synced. So, it kind of helps with the syncing of things. Unlike if the container gets changed, then it has to sync the entire container file. And if that container file is, gigabytes in size, or even, hundreds of megabytes in size, and it can take quite a while to sync. While with this solution, you know, if you change one file, it has to upload one file. And it uses the AES 256 encryption standard. It supports Windows, Linux, Mac OS, X, Android, and iOS. And now, not all of these operating systems are supported natively by Boxcryptor, since it's using the ENCFS standard. Some of them require you to actually use ENCFS, like on Linux. They don't actually have a Boxcryptor for Linux, but they have instructions on how to use ENCFS on Linux to open your Boxcryptor folder. And the free version, as I said before, is limited. It's limited to 2 gigabytes of data, which I think they provided that limit because that was the limit for Dropbox, is 2 gigabytes. Dropbox is limited to 2 gigabytes for the free version, and if you want more, you have to pay for it. Well, you have to pay for more than 2 gigabytes of data with Boxcryptor as well. The cost is varies by what device you're using it on. The Windows version costs $40, and you get unlimited storage space then. And I was just looking today, and that price is not based on the devices you use it on. It's based on by user. So if you pay $40 for the software, and you have 5 Windows machines you want to use it on, you can pay the $40 and install it on all 5 Windows machines if you're just using it for one user. And this also gives you the ability to have multiple encrypted folders. With the free version, you can have one encrypted folder. So you couldn't have, say, an encrypted folder in Dropbox and an encrypted folder on Google Drive. You can have one. With the pay version, you can have an unlimited number of encrypted folders on your system. And so that's that solution.
Yeah, the problem with, and certainly with the Mac solution, is one, it's a Mac solution. I mean, you're not going to mount these file systems on your Windows machine or your Linux machine without some additional software, and I don't even know if that exists. So you are limited. It's certainly not a portable solution, and forget about having any handheld devices, and that includes Apple stuff. They won't open these things. So that's one big downside. But if you're doing most of your work on a Mac, it's reasonable, but it's not a great solution. I'm not certainly happy with it. Just my little bit of use with it and having trouble with conflicted files. Even though I try my best, you know, I still have some troubles occasionally with it. So certainly I'm not claiming the Mac solution is the best. I think it's probably number 3 in terms of what we talked about so far.
Yes, and I would say that in terms of cloud storage and encryption with the cloud, with that criteria, I would probably say TrueCrypt would rank number 2, because basically I only rank it a little higher than a Mac because you can also run it on Windows and Linux, but it has the same issues in that if you're on a mobile device, you cannot you can't really access your files. Now, one of the things I really like about TrueCrypt is that it's open source and free. And I like the description Preston gave of Boxcryptor, but I was kind of curious about how you guys view encryption. I know there's kind of a thought out there that you should encrypt everything so no one knows anything about you. I guess I kind of come from the mindset that, you know, maybe 75% of the stuff I'm doing is not really very sensitive, but 25% of the documents I have are. And, you know, 2 gig encrypted for free on Boxcryptor seems like a lot of data that you can keep encrypted. I mean, that seems like a good deal to me. It doesn't seem like you necessarily would have to go for the paid version, though it offers many more features, and it's not really that expensive. It seems like the free version of it, at least from my standpoint, 2 gig encrypted, I think meets my current needs and will meet my needs for at least several years to come.
Of course, you say that now. But several years from now, you'll be going, how did I ever get by with 2 gigs?
Yes, that's very true. I can remember my first flash drive being 64 meg or something like that. And I was just thrilled. I was like, I can store so much data on this. This is just an incredible amount of data. I'll never need a key larger than this. So that's true, but I guess I also kind of see that when the day comes at 2 gigs, not very much, that tools like Boxcryptor might be saying, I mean, as soon as Dropbox says, well, we're going to give you 10 gig free because the market's expanded so much, then I think tools like Boxcryptor are going to say, yeah, we'll let you use up to 10 gig free. I think they're still going to kind of adjust as the size of data, you know, keeps expanding. So, you know, I guess from my viewpoint, the currently 2 gig is just, it's a lot of data, I think, that you can keep encrypted. And, you know, like I said, I'm more curious of, you know, from a security standpoint, what should we tell folks that are listening? Should we, you know, should we advocate that they encrypt every single thing they have? Or should we advocate that they kind of encrypt what they consider to be the most sensitive? And I know there's a couple trains of thought there. I know the danger in saying, well, just encrypt what you think is sensitive. And I've run into this myself, is sometimes due to convenience, I'll take something that's on that line and I'll say, well, it's not that sensitive, and it's easier for me to keep it in this unencrypted area. And maybe that's something where it should have truly gone into the encrypted area.
Well, my thought is, if you're going to post it on Facebook, then you probably don't need to encrypt it. If it's something you probably wouldn't want to be posted on Facebook, then maybe that's a candidate for encryption. But it's up to the individual person. I mean, you know, I encrypt things like that. I mean, I you know, my pictures and stuff like that, I may post and stuff, I don't think, you know, is a candidate for encryption. But say my tax returns, for example, that have, you know, I'm not going to post my tax returns on Facebook, and that's the kind of stuff that I'll encrypt. So, you know, it's easy to say, you know, encrypt the stuff you find sensitive, but I think if you kind of define what you mean by sensitive, like stuff you wouldn't post on Facebook, then maybe that will, you know, users will understand that a little bit better than saying, oh, don't encrypt stuff that's sensitive to you.
I don't know if that analogy works for everybody, because I could think of a lot of kids that use Facebook and post stuff they really shouldn't. So I don't know if that's a great mark of distinction between sensitive and non-sensitive. The assumption is that, you know, if I'm posting something to Facebook, I have some control over who's going to see it. I can either define it to be a close group of friends or public. So while that is one okay way of doing it for maybe older people who've been around a little while, younger kids who don't have this understanding yet that what they post may come back to haunt them, I don't know if that analogy works well for them. I think we'd have to figure out a better one for those folks. I don't have a good solution for that yet, sadly.
Yeah, and that might be an example of where it's better just to advocate, encrypt everything, you know, in that situation. Don't try to make a distinction. Don't worry about it. Just encrypt it all. Because, you know, I think it's a good analogy Preston used, but I think it's also just based on my usage of Facebook and my friends and colleagues. I know that we all post things differently, you know, and what we're willing to share. There are things people share on Facebook that just amaze me, you know, that it's so much personal detail that I find it alarming. Yet for them, it's not so much so. So, you know, I wonder if, you know, in that mindset, if they would even necessarily be, you know, worried about encryption. I mean, the nice thing about these tools that we've described, especially Boxcryptor for the cloud, is, you know, you could pay $40, encrypt everything, and don't worry, you know, and just know that the data you have in there is encrypted, and it's one less thing you have to worry about.
Yeah, and that ideally, the actual client that we install for Dropbox, for example, ideally that's where the encryption should be. I should have the ability to say, I'm going to mount my virtual disk here through Dropbox, and I'm going to have it encrypt everything in that. And then all of those encrypted bits get sent up to Dropbox. it doesn't work that way. And part of the reason it doesn't work that way is because Dropbox also has the ability to share things both publicly and with a limited group. So that method doesn't work for everything. But I think ideally, you know, having that encryption capability built into the actual client would be ideal. I would pay more money for that if that was available.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I think there's, I don't know of a service yet that does client-side encryption in a convenient manner, similar to Dropbox. I mean, I know, you know, there's a lot of backup solutions that you can get that will do client-side encryption, but they definitely don't have the convenience of Dropbox or Google Drive or the other solutions that are available.
Yeah, you know, and I think what we're going to probably see, you know, in a few years down the road is additional solutions that maybe finally bridge that gap. You know, with all the devices we have, with the cloud, it's obvious this technology is not going away. More and more people are getting their mobile devices. I think more and more people are going to the cloud. There's more and more cloud services popping up. And you know, just the amount of information they allow you to have for free, you know, there's an opportunity there. And I think someone's probably going to come along and kind of integrate it all into one and say, well, here's how this product's going to operate. And maybe it's even a commercial opportunity, Keith. Maybe someone's going to say, you know, for $50, you know, you can have this cloud service, you can have whatever, 20, 30 gig, you control the, you know, you set the encryption standard, and basically we're just storing all your encrypted data for you, and we don't have the ability to unlock it. Maybe that's coming down the road.
Could be. I think that part of the problem is that companies such as Google, and maybe less so Dropbox, their incentives are different. Dropbox is kind of this freemium model where they'll provide a small service for free and then charge if you want more storage, and that's how they survive as a company and allow you know, allow them to develop these types of services. But Google's model is a little different. They by default, for example, in Google Drive, give you 5 gigs to start instead of 2, and you can buy more. But they also have in their terms of service a clause that allows them to take the content of your files there and use it as a source of determining what advertising is appropriate for you. So clearly, they're reading your files. They're not sharing them, we hope, but they are reading them for their own purposes. And so part of the problem, what makes me wonder, is could we ever expect a Google-type solution where they provide encryption? I think the answer is no, we wouldn't see that. Dropbox, maybe. Their model is a little different. They're not exactly selling you stuff through advertising. So perhaps down the road we might see something from them. But I doubt we'd see it from Google.
Yeah, I don't know if Dropbox is going to go that route, but I think there's definitely going to be a solution that is going to go that route. I've just been searching while we've been talking, and I found a few solutions that are already apparently available. There's one called iDrive, which they call an encrypted version file system, and I'm imagining there's others that are going to be coming out that will have that framework in mind. I know Box.net is another solution that, while you can get multiple versions, and one's an enterprise version, which does support in client-side encryption. So these are, it's happening. It's just people have to kind of buy into it and realize that this is a valuable tool, and that encrypting before you send it to the cloud is a useful solution.
Yeah, I suppose that part of the discussion that people need to have is, like we talked about earlier, what do you put in the encrypted side, but what do you put in the non-encrypted side? And so for me, for example, I store a lot of PDFs that I might be reading. So files that contain content that are usually public in some way, although they might be ebooks or something like that. But I want to have that content in a central location in which I can access it from any device, including my mobile devices, and it works well for that. But there are some content that I create that is my own intellectual property, and And so those are protected. And some, I you know, given the integrity problems that can result from trying to encrypt a virtual disk onto a file synchronization service, you know, the conflicted copy problem, I don't even put them there. And I'd rather store them on my own machine and work on them there. Not so much because of the security issues, but more of the integrity issues. I don't want to lose the files, and I don't want to lose the latest changes I make to files. And so I have some hesitation that is more related to integrity than it is confidentiality in some respects.
Yes, and that's why I think we're probably going to see more products come out as time goes on, because these cloud services are getting popular, and people, you know, those that are starting to explore encrypting their files, you know, a portion of their files within the cloud service, you know, it, you know, I hate to say it's just a matter of time, but you know, it takes a little, you know, it does take a certain amount of luck to make sure you don't get a conflicted copy, just because of the way it syncs up to your devices. If that connection's broken and then you try to mount it from another machine, there's just a number of scenarios where your container file can get kind of conflicted, corrupted, and then you lose the ability to get to those latest changes. And depending on what backup files you can get to, you could lose quite a bit of data. So, you know, I do see there being some opportunity. I'm not sure what the interest is. You know, I think most people that use a service like Dropbox just realize that the data is encrypted by Dropbox and are pretty comfortable with that, with that model, and are not necessarily worried that, you know, Dropbox, you know, behind the scenes can look at their data, and under certain scenarios in their terms of service say that, you know, they will, you know, if they're subpoenaed, they will hand it over. But, you know, I think it's going to be kind of like how other things have happened. You know, if an incident occurs down the road where someone's data was compromised using a cloud service, then I think the interest and the desire for encrypting the data before you send it over to the cloud, it's going to increase. And then we're going to see, I think, other products maybe come along to help fill that void.
Okay, well, I think we're done with the discussion today. So I just wanted to thank the host, Keith Watson, and Mike Hill, as well as Sirius. I'm Preston Wiley. Have a safe and secure day.